The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Now joining us this week to place her reads on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf is architect and News Talk regular Roisin Murphy. Good evening to you, Roisin. You're very welcome to the Hard Shoulder.
I'm so excited. Thank you very much.
Let's start with now your favourite book.
Yeah.
This is unusual because most people, I'd say far more people have said that they've read this or that it's their favourite book than actually have. So I'm presuming that you have in fact read Ulysses.
I have in fact read Ulysses. Yeah. Now I would have said it's taken a lifetime. It's taken me a long, long time. I started off with Portrait of an Artist when I was about 14. Thought this is easy. This is great. Very accessible. Loved Dubliners. All of that. And then would bite into Ulysses, like would attempt Ulysses and take it in sections according to which part of the city I was studying, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Or we were doing protests. I think that it was very difficult. I couldn't understand
how fabulous. You read Ulysses in conjunction with maybe studying George in Dublin or in conjunction with that is the Keys or some such.
Precisely. It's really a relationship with Dublin. And it's a relationship with Dublin since I was about 17.
That is it's fascinating. Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like it is an Irish Bible. It should be in all the hotel lockers. And it's taken me, I think, until this year because I was doing an exhibition and I met a guy called Gavin Corbett, who's a writer. He used to be a writer.
I worked with Gavin in the Sunday Tribune.
Right. So he was
great writer.
I was telling him I was reading Ulysses and he was so enthusiastic. It was like with anybody you kind of talk to about Ulysses who really knows their stuff, just opens up and pours out information to you. It's not intellectual.
I am one of many, many people who has started Ulysses
I've
finished it.
I've read it 10 times.
All of it?
I got to about page 20.
So you and I are on the same page.
I've got to say something. First of all, it's really rude. Okay, that's for the first time I put it down.
You're selling it to me now.
Yeah, it's really rude. There are rude bits everywhere, all over it.
He,
allusions
he was
to all sorts of
quite
things.
Quite rude.
But Joyce. I don't know if he was rude or if he was just ahead of his time.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
His love letters were
incredible.
Very rude, though.
Yeah, but like, shouldn't love letters be rude? I think I remember somebody saying to me that himself and the wife were filthy. And this was like an Italian woman going, oh my God.
Well, they were sexting before sexting existed.
Yeah. So, but the thing for me about it is that he was, if you read, particularly if you read as a woman, like we tend to read it all about the lads and the lads go for basically a night out, a typical average student night out. They start off in Sandymount and end up somewhere in the North Circular Road and don't go to sleep and go down everywhere they shouldn't go. Mm-hmm. And it feels like that. It's a book all about conversation. It's Dublin built out of words.
So why is it so intimidating then?
I think because it's very clever. It's got a lot of allusions. It's linked to, you know, you need to have gone to Belvedere to study Greek and Latin to understand a lot of it. But it really is, and this is where, say, somebody like Kibbird talks about, Kibbird, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Kibbird.
When he says it is a book for ordinary people. So it's all conversation. So if you read it as a Dubliner.
You are selling this to me more than any Joycean ever has. And I've heard many Joyceans trying to describe it.
It's the chat. And it really, when you read it like that, where they're literally sitting there talking their way through Dublin, even as an architect, it mentions places, but everything is described in terms of activity or ordinary chat or what he's thinking himself. And it's so, the people are ordinary. They have an ordinary domestic. He's there terrified his wife is going to have an affair. You know, he's got all these domestic issues, but the way that he kind of transforms it into this kind of drama.
So it's like an old version of The Pit. You know, the new TV series where they spend a day in A&E, but this is a day in Dublin.
It is. But I mean, it has a lot of all these
I'm loving this.
Symbolisms and all that sort of stuff. And I did not read it like that. And I remember talking to Gavin about it because I said, I'm just going to plow through it. And I had one thing I was looking for. I look for buildings to see. And I had that thing where I want to, there's a lot of Joyce architecture under pressure, okay? So everybody in here probably knows all I do is talk about Dublin and what buildings are falling down. So part of it was to plough through it to find these buildings. So I read it like a real kind of plotter, looking for certain buildings.
But it's almost like a treasure map to
you, isn't it? Treasure map. So I didn't read it with any kind of literature in mind. And then I got into the writing. And then I kind of ended up in, I think it's the Arms, City Arms Hotel up in Brushy Street. And I was going, Molly Bloom's soliloquy is so powerful. And Night Town as well. Gavin had said, read Night Town, and that's all about the kind of red light district. And it's beautiful. It's the way he writes is lovely, but also the kind of, it's also.
I wonder, did you get more out of it because you didn't come with literary pretensions to it? Did you, that you 100%. Came with a love of Dublin?
A love of Dublin. And also, I have to get this done. I'm going to read this. I'm kind of determined to read it in a very pedantic, ordinary way. I was reading it as a practical exercise in reading the book to look for objects in it.
And is it accessible?
Are
there bits that you just go, I actually don't have a clue what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think there's definitely bits you don't have a clue. But then there's bits where he's sitting on Sandy Mount Strand looking up some young one's skirt. Or there's, like, it's very crude and basic and points. Then you're going, oh my God, what a dirty fella. And then he's kind of, like, there is that bit where you're going, and the period of time it was in. I mean, you're talking a period where they weren't, you know, I can understand we were like so severely moralistic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was we did the history of architecture in the home show, and you know, you're talking about Queen Victoria and all that, and they were
prudish.
There was prudish,
a prudery to it.
Yeah,
all.
So this guy's out there, and I think he's often given that kind of tokenism in Ireland, where like only us could have this incredible work of genius, a city that it's around, and treated with such kind of disdain
almost. Yeah. It's funny.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't have wanted it any other way, would he?
I think there's a reason he left, isn't there?
I think for anybody who struggles with Dublin, the other reason why I think I read it was I'm so kind of struggling with Dublin, what's happening with Dublin in terms of.
Because of our infrastructure, because of our buildings.
Our lack of support for the art spaces, the kind of lack of infrastructure, and the kind of lack of a kind of understanding about the scale of Dublin and places. There's this thing that, like, it's quite a pretty city, and it just seems that anytime you talk about its prettiness, it's all about, you know, it just gets lost somewhere. Everybody says it's ugly and all this kind of thing. But if you read, I don't think it's really beautiful. And I think that there's something about Dubliners as well, the crack. There is an awful lot of chat. Like, you can't really go even on a bus in Ireland without talking to somebody. So there's all that encapsulated in the book, but it kind of preserves your sense of Dublin. So it gives you hope, because it's also a novel of kind of disregard for Dublin in a way. He's quite practical and quite kind of. He's trying to get his way back to Paris to his wife, basically. I mean, the reason he wrote it is he ended up here at his mum's funeral. And that's real Irish, his mum's funeral. But he was at his mum's funeral and he thought his wife was having an affair with a poet in Paris. So he got this pang of wanting to go back, just like Ulysses back to Penelope. That's the Greek reference.
Yeah.
He had this feeling of wanting to go back to Paris to be with Nora. So it's built on that passion, that love story as well. So underneath it also is a huge love story between this Dublin man and this West of Ireland woman, which is very Irish as well, because you can imagine where she came from in a way that, like, my, you know, and my parents, one was a Dub and one was from the West of Ireland. They had that kind of tension in Ireland that still exists now between rural and.
It certainly does. Okay, you're going from maybe the greatest book ever written to.
I think it's one of the greatest descriptions of the greatest book.
Yeah.
I now want to read it, really.
Do and read it.
Past page 27.
Yeah, and read. Forgive yourself as well. Just keep reading. That's my other thing. Don't stop if you don't understand. Just keep going until you find some naughty bits.
You're going from that to Perfection.
Oh, Perfection. Oh, my
this
God.
Is your the last book you read.
Okay, yeah, Perfection came in. My son's girlfriend, Ava, brought it into the house, and she's doing a master's in art history, so this was a beautiful book. And we often discuss books, but this book is a perfect Prussian blue. Perfection is written in the front and it's thin, so I picked it for the book club. I'm in a book club who I was warned I had to mention the names Siobhan, Sarah, Gemma, and Rachel. Anyway, if you go on to that show and don't mention us,
in your book club.
Yeah, so I finally got to pick this book, so I had to read it, and it is absolutely eviscerationally depressing. That's all I'm going to say. Oh, it's so sad.
Is it?
This is the last book you read, so it didn't have to be the one you love.
No,
depressing,
it's so sad.
Okay, I'm going to...
It's dystopian, European dystopian.
Is it depressing in any good way?
In a good way, in that it describes... It's also another visual book, so that's why I like it. It has this enamel teacups. It describes these people who are trying to perfect their life, that everything looks gorgeous. So they have the right kind of cheese plant. They're living in Berlin. They've left their home to set up in kind of an ascetic life in this beautiful apartment in Berlin. And they work as kind of graphic artists and sublet it and let it out during the summer for Airbnb. And they work, they eat their sourdough, they make their own yogurts, they become great foodies, but they live a life that's on the turn of the last millennium, where suddenly we're talking about tech industries taking over cities. So it's quite dark.
So is it, it's about the emptiness of modern living,
yes,
is that?
It's about the emptiness of modern living.
I love
living.
The sound of it, I have to
it's
say.
It's brilliantly written. And it's a translation, and some translations are poor, but this one is excellent. It's really, really good. And also,
I never really thought about that as being an issue. About, I would have thought translation is quite straightforward, but you're saying it's not. Well, it can be.
A good translator, if you're reading a book that's come from either Italy, France, usually they're brilliant. So the other one that would have been really good is Perspectives, another P one, which was about, and it's a history book. And that was about some letters that were found. Sorry, I'm dropping books.
Are they dislikable, these Berliners? Because are they likable?
No, they're not Berliners. They're sad young people. They're like our kids if they go away and they don't make it.
They move to Berlin because it's the hip kind of city, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, that's it precisely.
I'm guessing you look, I mean, as an architect, you've got to love Berlin, don't you? Every architect I know loves Berlin.
I do love Berlin, but I am that person who's wedded to Dublin. I have this thing where I quite like the lack of beauty sometimes in Dublin, the ordinariness. But Berlin is hard work. You're talking about, you know, had grey hair before they had grey hair. A lot of Birkenstocks. I am not, contrary, I get a lot of Birkenstocks from people as presents for some reason. I don't like Birkenstocks. I am a Doc Martin lady. I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's very Birkenstock, bleached floors. So it's that thing where you're trying to make life perfect.
I have long believed that perfectionism is the, not even just the enemy of the good, perfectionism is the enemy of happiness.
Yes.
Because to me, perfection cannot exist, in fact, and the pursuit of it, you're on a hide into nothing but misery.
Okay. 100%. And I think I am a designer, okay, architect, interiors person. So when I thought that when I would perfect my house or perfect my life or live in a beautiful apartment, I, like these people in the book, my life would drop into perfection. And life is just completely unlike that. Life writes a completely different story for you. You know, it's like that curse, never make a plan. You know, the Chinese curse, you know, it's like, I really found that I thought that you could craft perfection with having the right coloured, you know, you pursue these things and then you discover that in actual fact somebody dies or you break up with your husband or you lose your, like millions of things happen in this well of perfection, almost as like
but
laughing
I would imagine
back at you.
Even, and I know nothing because I'm obviously not a designer, but I would imagine that you could be designing something could go wrong and you actually could end up with something that you didn't intend, but that you actually end up preferring. Do you know what I mean? I think sometimes there's a beauty in the chaos and the mess and the thing that went arseways.
That's why I think I only ever painted my house this year. I lived in perfection before it went tits up. So then I thought I'm going to live in a bit of chaos. And then chaos does allow that.
Yeah.
Chaos allows exactly what you're talking about.
What's your honourable mention?
Yeah.
The honourable mention is Dark Lies the Island.
Kevin Barry.
Sorry, I forgot Philippa. I have to mention Philippa. Oh my God, she's cursing and she listens to News Talk
all
the time.
Is she on the book club?
She's in the book club, yeah.
She's in there with
Philippa,
Rachel.
Honourable mention.
Rachel, Philippa.
Sarah.
She's going to go. Rachel, Sarah, Gemma, Siobhan. And,
have you got everyone there?
I think so. And the dogs probably. Anyway, the thing is, Dark Lies the Island is...
Short stories, series of short stories.
Yes. But it is Kevin Farry's book. I was so electrified by this. Because I'm from the country and I gave it to a fellow who was and his wife, Elizabeth and Tony, who ran a guest house and a series of houses in Ballina in Mayo, because it was so describes every small hotel from Ackle to Dublin. That thing of being in the darkness of rural Ireland, trying to struggle.
The title comes from Clew Bay, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Mayo.
And it's about that he has these incredible gift for language. It's so beautiful. Now, I'd given my copy away, so I was struggling to find quotes for it. But his turn of phrase is, I would say it's close to poetry, like he taught, but it's his description of the darkness of Ireland. And he talks about the one in particular is these two. The one we loved was the two ladies who are, there's these two APs are going robbing children from the road and they rob a toddler and they take them in the back of the car. They're old ladies and they spot, they're like child snatchers. But then they look at the baby in the back of the car and they're OAP ladies and they think he's a bit snotty. I can't take that. They put him back on the road. But it's that dark.
That is dark.
It is dark. And it's all about, it's the twist in the tale. So it's like, it's, but they're short. So they have that accessibility, and they're that thing where if you're from rural Ireland, it cuts to the darkness and the oddity of that can be there, and where somebody's growing hash in their garden at the same time, but that person is 70, maybe decided they're going to have a grow house. It's that weird slice of rural Ireland.
What's next on your book club list?
I don't know yet because I've read Perfection, because that was the last one I read. So
there you go.
I'm ahead.
Perfection.
I don't know. What'll happen is they'll turn around. They'll say that was I picked it. So they'll go, that was terrible, I won't be allowed to pick for 6 months.
Yeah, no more your architectural type. Novels.
Trendy novels. So I won't be allowed to pick then.
Do you know what?
Say for a while.
Those three books are fantastic picks to go up on the hard shoulder bookshelf. I'm actually delighted with all of them, and I suspect I may in fact dip into them too.
Attempt Ulysses, that's all I can say.
I think I'm gonna. Okay. Yeah. Thank you
so
much.
Before I die, Roisin Murphy, thanks a million.
Thank you very much, guys.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.